1985, I went to Israel, Egypt, and our tour ended in Rome, and I and two other guys sent our luggage back with the group we had been traveling with, and we got our backpacks out of our luggage and packed just a little bit, and we began backpacking across Europe. In Belgium, I left those guys because they wanted to see the fine arts type things. I had nothing against the fine arts things. I wanted to go to the military cemeteries. And so I went to the one in Luxembourg, and it was very moving. And then I had to be in, had to catch a plane the next day in England, in London, and I was in Paris. And I'm backpacking, train riding, and so I determined I was going to go see the beaches of Normandy before I was to fly from London to Northern Ireland. And so I got in Paris and I began, I took a train as far as I could go north and west to a town where the line ended on the train until the next day. And I stayed in that little town that night, set my alarm for 5:30 in the morning because that's about what time I needed to get up in order to catch the next train to get closer to the beaches of Normandy. And that night I slept very well, so well that I didn't hear my alarm that went off the next morning. In fact, I had set it wrongly and I did not get up. I was totally frustrated, so I thought, you know, I've come all this way. I'm going to see the beaches of Normandy. I want to see the military cemetery there. So I took my backpack and started walking north of that city, and I stuck my thumb out. I don't know if that's what that meant in Europe or not, in France. And so I'm walking backwards as every time a car would pass on this little highway. And finally a man stopped and he picked me up and I got in the car and I said, I'd like to go to Bayeux, France. And he didn't understand what I was saying. And I had to, you know, act like I was a choo-choo train for this guy. It was quite embarrassing, except he didn't even understand that. Somehow he got me to the city, dropped me off at the train station. And I ran in and I said, I want to get to the beaches of Normandy. Can I rent a bike? They had a bike rental and they said, yes, you can rent a bike. And he said, and I said, I need to be back for my 3:23 train this afternoon. This was at noon. And he started putting the bike away. And he said, there's no way you can make it. It was 22 kilometers. And so I insisted and he gave me the bike. I gave him my down payment and I started pedaling as madly and as fast as I could to get to the beaches of Normandy, trying to figure out which roads to take, and I was sweating by the time I got there. It took me 30 minutes to get there without stopping, and I was overwhelmed. As I went to see the tombstones, I saw Teddy Roosevelt's son. I saw many, many, and there were 10,000 graves there overlooking the beaches of Normandy, and I thought, okay, I've got 30 minutes, but I was so struck by it that I took 45 minutes to an hour. Finally, I realized I've got to get back on the bike and I've got to head back to that train station. I've got to catch that train. It was just like an accordion effect. If I don't catch that train, I miss everything else down the line. And I can't get to London on time. And so I pedaled furiously to get back. And as I got into the town, I wish I could remember the name. I think it was the town of Bayeux where I was for that train. And I was watching my watch, and I pulled into town at 3:21. The train would leave at 3:23. And so I think I just ignored all the signs and just blasted through stop signs and everything else, and rode into the train station, skidded to a stop right in front of the guy. It was 3:23. I saw the train. It was out there. It was starting to move. And I told the man, give me my deposit. He was struck. He just, you went to Normandy. Yes, I went to Normandy. Give me my deposit. I've got to go. And so I got my deposit, ran as the train was moving, got on. I was just dripping with sweat. And I sat down and said, "Thank you, Lord." Put my backpack on my lap and just sat there like, ugh. And I was sitting across from a man. And I saw him eyeing my backpack. It said USA on it. And he said, "Are you from United States of America?" I could tell he was a Frenchman. He could hardly speak English. And I said, "Yes." I said, "Oui." And he grabbed my hand and he said, "Thank you, America." I will never forget that. Memorial Day has a special meaning to me because of what so many have done for you and for me, that we might enjoy the freedoms that we do. I was once reading a story about a U.S. Navy admiral who was attending a naval conference that included admirals from the United States, from England, Canada, Australia, and the French navies. He was at a reception and he found himself standing with a large group of officers that included personnel from most of those countries, and everybody was chatting away in English as they were talking, when a French admiral suddenly complained that whereas Europeans learn many languages, Americans learn only English. He then demanded, "Why is it that we always have to speak English in these conferences rather than speaking French?" And without hesitating, the American admiral replied, "Maybe it's because the Brits, Canadians, Aussies, and Americans arranged it so you wouldn't have to speak German." And the way the story was written, it says you could have heard a pin drop. There was a second story, and I don't know if these are true, but it does say something. But this is giving a name. Robert Whiting, an elderly gentleman of 83, arrived in Paris by plane. At French customs, he took a few minutes to locate his passport in his carry-on. "You've been to France before, monsieur?" the customs officer asked sarcastically. Where was it when we went to Europe and they were sarcastic about our passport? That was Germany, those Krauts. I'm a Kraut, so I can say that. And so Mr. Whiting admitted that he'd been to France previously. "Then you should know enough to have your passport ready." The American said, "The last time I was here, I didn't have to show it." "Impossible. Americans always have to show their passports on arrival in France." The American senior gave the Frenchman a long, long, hard look. Then he quietly explained, "Well, when I came ashore at Omaha Beach on D-Day in 1944 to liberate this country, I couldn't find a single Frenchman to show a passport to." Those just really help us understand what we have done as a nation to help others. Years ago, I went to a Weld County Veterans Memorial program, and they gave this program, and on the back, it just had some interesting things printed. It said, here are some instructions printed on a U.S. rocket launcher. Aim toward the enemy. I thought that was pretty good. And this was in an infantry journal. Quote, "If the enemy is in range, so are you." And this one says, it was signed "Your Buddies." "Don't draw fire. It irritates the people around you." Tomorrow, folks, and I know you've heard this, I know you've seen this. Tomorrow, remember those who died in battle so that we might live in freedom. You see, it is the veteran, not the preacher, who has given us the freedom of religion. It is the veteran, not the reporter, who has given us the freedom of the press. It is the veteran, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the veteran, and I say those who have died for their country too, mainly today, not the campus organizer who has given us the freedom to assemble. It is the veteran, not the lawyer, who has given us the right to a fair trial. It is the veteran, not the politician, who has given us the right to vote. It is the veteran who serves under the flag. Remember to fly your flag tomorrow. But Memorial Day has also become a day when all of the dead are remembered. It started after the war between the states, when flags and flowers would be placed upon the graves of both Confederate and Union soldiers. Every year we, as my siblings and I, arranged to have flowers put on the graves of my dad and my mom. My dad was an Army veteran. He had married my mom, and after my oldest sister was born, he was about to be shipped to Korea when that forgotten war ended. Forgotten war. How ironic. Forgotten war, Memorial Day. And that is one of the wars that we tend to forget. But I want us to think today and tomorrow that as we remember the dead, one day you will be one of the remembered on Memorial Day. You say, I don't like to think of that. Unless the Lord comes first, you too will be one of those remembered. Today, you're the subject. You're the one doing the remembering. But one day you'll be the object, the one remembered. And everybody wants to be well remembered. Do you not? People today are consumed with their legacy. So as I said earlier, Memorial Day, by the way, it originated as Decoration Day after the war between the states. But somebody wrote this article and said, the observance of the day permits us to overlook any defects of character of the war dead, attributing to one brief moment of ultimate sacrifice the power to wash away all prior moral defects for those who died in the service of their country. So I want you to ask yourself, how will I be remembered? How would I like to be remembered? And with that in mind, I want us to consider Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 7. The passage I have preached on before, Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 7. I'll give you a moment to find it and we can read it together. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 7. The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. This passage does not just apply to how you are remembered after you die. It is also for how you are remembered while you yet live. You meet someone, and then when you're in a conversation with somebody else and that person is mentioned, how is that person remembered? So it applies to how we are remembered in life and in death. Here we have a compound sentence. You've got a subject, verb, and an object in the first part of verse 7, the same thing after the colon in the last part of verse 7. So you've got a sentence when it says, the memory of the just is blessed. Complete sentence, correct? And then you have, but the name of the wicked shall rot. The second complete sentence. So we have a compound sentence. 80 times in the Old Testament, about 40 times in Proverbs alone, the just and the wicked are placed in antithetic parallelism, is what I read in the theological word book of the Old Testament. So you have here an antithetic parallelism. You've got the just and the wicked, antithetical to each other. And the memory of the just is blessed, the name of the wicked shall rot. You've got the righteous and the wicked, the just and the wicked that are mentioned here. In this chapter alone, you see this occur 7 or 8, 9 times. I didn't count them. Look at verse 3. You see the righteous and the wicked. Verse 6, you see the just and the wicked. Verse 11, we've already seen verse 7. Verse 11, the mouth of a righteous man, but the violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Verse 16, the righteous and the wicked. Verse 20. The tongue of the just, the heart of the wicked. Verse 24, the fear of the wicked. the desire of the righteous. Verse 25, verse 28, 30, 32. In this chapter alone, you see that many antithetical statements, antithetic parallelisms. You've got the righteous and you have the wicked. So I want to do something this morning by taking that same compound sentence and comparing those two sentences. We're going to compare the subject of each sentence, the object of the preposition, and the verb. Let's look at the subject. Let's compare each subject. What is the subject in the first part of verse 7? Well, it's the word memory. What is the subject in the second part? The name. So you've got these two subjects. Let's look at the memory. That's closely related to a word that has to do with reciting, being able to recite, to remember, and to recall. You can recite why a name is remembered. When it says that the memory of the just is blessed, when it says the word memory there, it's not just, oh, I've heard that name before. That's not the idea of the word memory. It's not, oh, that name rings a bell. The word memory here literally brings to the forefront the ability to recite, oh, I know who that is. The memory of the just is not something that takes a long time to try to recall. It's somebody who, because of their life, you remember them right away. I can mention names to you. Even as you read them in the book of Hebrews, I can mention the name of Noah. Everybody knows the name Noah. Noah was a just man. You know the name Abraham. So there's the subject of that first part of the verse, the memory. Then you've got the name. And whereas memory is related to recitation, name is related to reputation. I'm quoting from the Theological Word Book now. Further, to cut off the name was equal to liquidating the person himself. When God instructed the Israelites to conquer the nations of Canaan, he said, "Thou shalt destroy their name from under heaven," Deuteronomy 7, 24. Do away with their name even. Did you know that up until recently, as the Bible talks about the Hittites, people didn't know who the Hittites were? And the critics of the Bible said, see, the Bible, there's no one called the Hittites. And then they discovered in some archaeological digs the word Hittites. Their name had been so wiped out from memory that even up until this day, people didn't think they existed. Why? God says, you shall take their name and wipe it out. You see, the name of the wicked shall rot, but the memory of the just is blessed. So while the name of the wicked rots, the memory of the just, including his name, is blessed. So there we've compared each subject, memory and name. Now let's compare each object of the preposition. What's the preposition? It's the word of. So in the first part we have the object of the preposition. It's the just. The memory of the just. If there was one word you would like to be remembered as, what would it be? One word. I know you want to give a sentence, don't. What would that word be? Well, I'd like to be remembered as kind, generous. Maybe you'd like to be known as punctual, when actually late should be on your tombstone. Or happy, dedicated, faithful, loyal. A leader, loving, patient, meek, humble, redeemed. I've put all kinds of words here. How would you like to be known? Fair. You could be one of those without being some of the others. In other words, you could be redeemed without being dedicated. But one word encapsulates all of those that I just mentioned. It's the word. Just. This is not the word fair. Today the word fair has to do with my feelings. That's not fair. My question to you is, okay, you may not think it's fair, but is it just? Today, we used to have a department called the Department of Justice. Today, it should be called the Department of Fairness, because they're trying to make things fair with outcomes rather than justice. When God was ready to destroy this earth with the flood, he saved one man and family because that man was described as not generous, not happy, not fair. But how was Noah described? The Bible says he was a just man. Genesis 6:9. When God was ready to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, Abraham asked if God would destroy it if he found 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10 of what kind of people? What one word did Abraham say, Lord, if you would find this kind of person there, would you still destroy it? Was it, Lord, if you would just find 10 hospitable people, would you destroy it? You see, people say that God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah because they weren't hospitable enough. Well, that's not the word used there in Genesis chapter 18. When Abraham's pleading because of his nephew Lot there, if you found what kind of people? Righteous. It's the word just. Lord, if he could just find 10 righteous, no, I still wouldn't destroy it. I'm showing to you the importance of being just, righteous. God knew Abraham to be one who does justice. Genesis 18:19. The last words of King David in 2 Samuel 23:3 were this. The God of Israel said, the rock of Israel spake to me, he that ruleth over men must be. Can you guess what word that is? You know, if you have a politician today, and if there should be one thing that should be true about our nation's leaders, what's that one thing, just one word that could be spoken to describe that leader, that mayor, that governor, that president, that congressman? What should it be? The Supreme Court, justice. What's that one word that they should be that David says, the rock of Israel spake to me and he said, he that ruleth over men must be just in the fear of God. In the Old Testament, the word that is found here in Proverbs 10:7 is found 205 times. Related words, more than 500 times. The most occurrences in one chapter of the word just in the entire Old Testament is found right here in Proverbs chapter 10. What is justice? What is righteousness? I go back to the theological word book of the Old Testament. The definition, quote, the root basically connotes conformity to an ethical or moral standard, not deviating from the standard. A just man is someone who does not deviate from the standard. Well, that provokes another question. What is the standard? Because if I'm not supposed to deviate from it, what is it? What is the standard? How is God described often in the Bible? I'll just give you one verse. Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 4. He is the rock. His work is perfect. For all his ways are judgment, a God of truth and without iniquity. Just and right is he. Amen. He is just. God is the standard. For you to get to heaven, you've got to be as righteous as God. We all fail. No one here is as righteous and just as God. No sin shall ever enter heaven. Read about it in Revelation chapter 21. The good news is coming, don't worry. Just and right is he. He's always faithful. He always fulfills his responsibility. He never says, oh, I forgot. I told you I was going to do that. I forgot. God never does that. He always fulfills his responsibility. As he is, so is his word. Listen to as I read Psalm 119, 172. My tongue shall speak of thy word, for all thy commandments are righteousness. All of God's commandments are just, they're righteous. Now, let's find an even further description of righteousness in the Old Testament. Go with me, please, to Deuteronomy chapter 25. Deuteronomy chapter 25. Turn there with me, please. We're going to see the word just used a couple of times in these four verses I'm going to read. Deuteronomy 25, verse 13. Thou shalt not have in thy bag diverse weights, a great and a small. Thou shalt not have in thine house diverse measures, a great and a small. Okay, do you have in your house diverse measures? Measuring cups, anybody? And what are they? You probably have the quarter cup, the third cup, the half a cup, and the full cup. That's not what it's talking about. Let's read on. Verse 15. But thou shalt have a perfect and, next word, just weight. A perfect and, next word, just measure shalt thou have, that thy days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. For all that do such things, that is, those who have a great and a small measure, and a great and a small weight, and all that do unrighteously are an abomination unto the Lord thy God. So here we have given to us a definition, excuse me, an example of what justice and righteousness is. You see, in those days, they didn't have scales that you could go buy at a store. They would have a weight that had been weighed, and they knew exactly what the weight was, so that if you were to buy some wheat from somebody and you were supposed to get so much money for that pound of wheat, they would have a stone that weighed exactly 1 pound, and on the opposite side of the scales, they would have something that would hold that much wheat. And so they would pour the wheat in there until the scale came up and met that pound stone. And you'd say, I got a pound of wheat. How do you know? Because it was measured on a scale against a pound, a stone. It was official. Well, what would you do if you wanted to do something to somebody and say, you know what, I need to make a little more money. And so you get yourself a weight that instead of being 16 ounces, it's 14. And you pick it up, you go, well, that feels like a pound. And that person knows it's 14 ounces. And so they've got a great weight and a small weight. And you don't know the difference when they put that small wheat in there. And they pour the wheat in there and the scale balances out. And you think you've got a pound, and how many ounces do you have? 14. That is an abomination to God. You stole. You did not do what was righteous. You did not do what was justice. Maybe it would make more sense if I did it this way. How much of an ounce, how much is an ounce of gold worth today? Before I came in here, I checked. $1,949 an ounce. Wouldn't you like to have some gold right now? How many grams are in an ounce? 28.35. So, you're up here panning gold, and you find something, which you never do. It's always that false, fool's gold. And you think you've found some gold, and you go, I think this is about an ounce. So you take it to someone who buys gold like a jeweler, and he weighs it, and he says, that's not an ounce. That's 25 grams, not 28.35. And he has adjusted his scales to benefit himself. Is he a just jeweler? No, he's an abomination to God. Okay, I've taken a lot of time to define what righteousness is. True righteousness is not what you try to make men think of you, but what God knows you to already be. Jesus had told the Pharisees once, "You are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For that which is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God." Luke 16:15. You see, a man could be wicked but made to appear righteous by the last deed in his life. Think about the man who has lived a really sorry life, a wicked life, but the last thing he does is he saves somebody. You go, wow, his memory's going to be great. What about all the things he did in the past that everybody's going to remember? My point is this. You could lay down your life for a friend or somebody else, but that does not balance out your wickedness. You still die a wicked man. One last observation about the just in verse 7. It is in the singular. Each deed of righteousness remembered or recited is according to that just man. On the other hand, I want you to notice the word wicked. Now we're coming to the wicked. And the wicked is in plural. It has to do with a class of people in violation of a standard. A class of persons who are evil with a focus on the guilt of violating a standard, according to the theological word book of the Old Testament. A group of people who violate a standard. It denotes the kind of a life that is opposite to God's character, who is righteous, who is just. You'll read this in Psalm 45:7. "Thou lovest righteousness and hatest wickedness." Have you ever met somebody who says he loves everybody, he loves everything, he's a good man? How can you love righteousness and not hate wickedness? It's impossible. The wicked is plural because the wicked love to hang around each other. And it's always easy to find other wicked people to hang around. It's hard to find righteous, just people to hang around. Until hopefully when you come to church, you find some people who are trying to live a life that pleases the Lord. But the wicked are plural because they hang around each other. And by the way, they often hang with each other. And they like to go in groups. There's the wicked. And so we've got the subject, the object of the preposition. Now we come to the last thing. Compare each verb. The verb in the first part of the verse is what? Is blessed. The verb in the second part is what? Out loud. Shall rot. Let's compare those two. The thought of this proverb relates to the eternal realm. Is blessed. The root of the word bless is related to the word knee. Yeah, even that knee that you've had replaced, it's related to the word knee. Why would the word bless be related to the word knee? The possible association is somebody who would kneel before somebody to receive a blessing. From whom would you receive a blessing? Well, in general, the blessing is transmitted from the greater to the lesser. Therefore, the blessing here is not so much from other people as from God himself. The memory of the just is blessed. From a greater to a lesser. This memory carries on into eternity. Listen, Psalm 112:6, "The righteous shall be in everlasting remembrance." Let me read that verse again, that part of Psalm 112:6. "The righteous shall be in everlasting remembrance." The memory of the just is blessed. The name of the wicked shall what? it shall rot. With time, the name of the wicked decays. This is someone who is as corrupt, their name is as corrupt as their character. How many people today have named their daughters Jezebel? Athaliah. Or their sons, Cain. There may be some. Or Nero. Or Judas. When we first moved to Colorado, maybe 2 years after we had moved to Colorado, there was a famous congresswoman, I call her infamous, from the Boulder, Denver area who was retiring. And the Greeley Tribune had this thing in there, how do you think she will be remembered? And they wanted feedback from people in the community. So I wrote what I thought she would be remembered as. And all I did was wrote Proverbs 10:7, "The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot." So I put Proverbs 10:7b in there, "The name of the wicked shall rot." And honestly, today I can't even remember what her name was. I couldn't tell you. I could go look it up, but I can't remember. The fact that their name rots is not accidental. It's providential. You see, the Bible says the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous and his ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. God wants to cut off their remembrance forever and ever. Psalm 9:6 says this, "Their memorial is perished with them." Tomorrow's Memorial Day. The name of the wicked, their memorial is perished with them. You say, well, today they're taking the names of good people, statues and so forth, and they're tearing them down, and they're trying to make us remember wicked people like Barack Obama and Joe Biden and so forth. Don't worry, folks, their names are going to rot. And what's happened to men like Charles Spurgeon and my George Washington, all trying to get rid of those names. Don't worry. This has to do with eternal remembrance. I could take you through an exercise in the Old Testament, and I want to do that very quickly. So you're going to have to turn to these passages very quickly. This has to do with the burial of the kings of Judah. Go back to 2 Chronicles chapter 14. Let's just do this little exercise. These are comparing the names of those who were just and those who were wicked. 2 Chronicles chapter 14 and verse 2. "King Asa did that which was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God," it says in 2 Chronicles 14, 2. Now jump to 16:14. "And they buried him in his own sepulcher, which he had made for himself in the city of David, and laid him in the bed which was filled with sweet odors and diverse kinds of spices, prepared by the apothecary's art, and they made a very great burning for him." Very respectful to King Asa. King Asa was one who did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Go to chapter 21. Brother Paul, would you turn the fans on, please, a little bit higher, on medium. I see people waving papers. Jehoram, chapter 21 and verse 6. "And he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, like as did the house of Ahab, for he had the daughter of Ahab to wife, and he wrought that which was evil in the eyes of the Lord." Notice what happens to Jehoram in verse 20. 32 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 8 years. Departed without being desired. Departed without being desired. Go to chapter 28. Notice verse 2. "Ahaz walked in the ways of the kings of Israel, made molten images for Balaam, wicked king." Notice how he is buried in verse 27 of chapter 28. "Ahaz slept with his fathers. They buried him in the city, but they brought him not to the sepulchers of the kings of Israel." Notice Hezekiah, Chapter 29, verse 2, he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. Notice chapter 32, 33, when he passes away. Hezekiah slept with his fathers. They buried him in the chiefest of the sepulchers, did him honor at his death. Josiah in chapter 34, where he is mentioned in verse 2 as doing that which was right in the sight of the Lord. Chapter 35, verses 24 to 25, talks about his burial and how he was honored at his burial. How was wicked Athaliah buried? How was wicked Jezebel buried? Did you know that when they came to bury her, they could not find her? Because the dogs had eaten her flesh. The wicked and their names shall rot. Back in 2016, I was in China, and I had a few days after I had taught my group up in the mountains, and we were in Beijing, and my guide, a Christian young man, took me. I said, I'd like to go to Tiananmen Square, and I'd like to go to the Forbidden City. We spent an entire day. Went to Tiananmen Square, waited for some kind of a parade. There were thousands and thousands of people. I read where a million people could be fit in Tiananmen Square. And we waited for the changing of the guard, and I watched the changing of the guard. And then I said, what's that over there? And he took me, he said, well, that's the tomb of Chairman Mao. So we went there, and we were the only two there. I said, where is everybody? He said, people hate him. They hate him with a passion. I said, you've got to be kidding me. Here it is in Tiananmen. Nobody, all these thousands of people, nobody's going to his tomb. That's how he is remembered. And yeah, the name of Chairman Mao Zedong rots. A wicked, ungodly man. When I asked him, then why did they make his tomb? He said, this is just a show. A man who was responsible for approximately 40 to 70 million deaths through starvation, prison labor, executions. His name rots. The name Stalin rots. This Memorial Day, folks, let's remember those who gave their lives for our freedom, but also consider how you will be remembered. Will your name rot? That's literally what happens to everyone who dies in his or her sin. Your name will rot. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life, your name's not in the book of life, shall be cast into the lake of fire. You see, the face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off their remembrance from the earth. Or will the memory of you be blessed? That applies only to the just, only to the righteous. But you said, Pastor, that none of us is as righteous as God, and that's the standard. That's correct. But he sent his Son, and he made him to be sin for us. He who knew no sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. And today, my position as a believer is righteous only because of Jesus Christ. I cannot establish my own righteousness, and you can't either. He took my sin upon him and put his righteousness upon me. Your status can be changed immediately, even as that of one of the thieves crucified with Jesus when he pleaded, Lord, What's the next word? Remember. Remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus, his way of saying, I will remember you, is this. Today, thou shalt be with me in paradise. All he could do was trust in the righteousness of the one being crucified right next to him. How about you? How about you? None of us is righteous except in Jesus Christ. Praise God for Jesus Christ.